Welcome to Word on the Street, a weekly podcast from Barclays where our experts help ordinary investors make sense of the latest news and events impacting the world's financial markets.
Welcome to this week's budget special of Word on the Street. We're recording this at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, so quite literally fresh off the press. I can sense Will and Claire still working out what they might even be saying on here. But there's always lots of anticipation leading up to these announcements, further fueled, of course, this time around by this likely being the last before the next UK general election. And it's fair to say there were a few interesting changes. So as ever, we'll get Will's take on everything from a markets perspective, but we're also joined this week by Claire Francis, a savings and investments director at Barclays Smart Investor, our digital investing platform, just for some additional insights into what this all ultimately means for personal finances. So thanks for joining both. The teams here at Barclays will obviously be going through the changes in some detail over the coming days and weeks. But Claire, do you want to maybe just start with the key takeaway points to note?
Yeah, I think what we heard today was that obviously the good news is that inflation is falling, and we'll cover that in a little bit more detail. But that's given the Chancellor scope to do more perhaps than maybe was the case a year or so ago. But I think there is still a recognition that despite falling inflation, many households are continuing to struggle with the cost of living. So we did see a number of announcements just extending the support that's already in place to help offset some of the pressure that exists on household bills at the moment. So, for example, the 5% reduction on fuel duty, which was going to be removed, is set to remain in place now for another year. And fuel duty is going to be frozen until March 2025. Also, alcohol duty is going to stay frozen until February next year. So those are a few things that don't sort of make people better off, but aren't going to lead to an increase in bills, which could have otherwise happened. But what we did see was a number of sort of planned changes to tax and taxation, which is quite interesting. So one of them, which will benefit a lot of families, is changes and reforms to child benefit. Now, we're not going to see the new system introduced until April 2026. But in the interim, the level at which parents will have to start sort of reducing, you know, paying back some of the benefit that they receive, it's currently set at £50,000. So if there's one parent who earns more than £50,000, they don't receive the full child benefit. That's going to increase to £60,000 from April. So that will help some families. Also, we saw changes announced to capital gains tax on property. So that's going to fall. The rate of capital gains tax will fall from 28% to 24% from the 6th of April. It doesn't affect people if you're selling your main residence, but it is relevant for landlords and those with second homes. So there'll be good news for them. We also saw the announcement of a significant change to the non-dom tax regime. So that's going to be abolished and replaced with a new system from April 2025, where people who are sort of arriving into the UK will start to pay the same tax as everyone else after 4 years. And Miles, I think obviously that will impact some of our sort of wealth and private banking clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was clearly something that was well speculated going into the announcement. But given that's perhaps slightly more niche and requires slightly more specialised advice, then maybe we'll park that for now. But as you say, if that is directly relevant to anyone listening, then please do get in touch with your wealth manager or wealth planner, and we can discuss that in more detail.
But I think, you know, the changes that I've just announced, I haven't announced them, I'm just talking about them. they sort of paved the way for the big announcement, I suppose, which was the headline grabber, which the government is hoping will be picked up and is a reduction in tax more widely. And that's in relation to national insurance contributions. So if you remember back in the November budget, we saw a reduction to national insurance announced then. But we're going to get a further cut, which takes effect from April. So for employees, the rate of national insurance is going to fall by a further 2% from 10% to 8%. And for the self-employed, their rate of national insurance will fall from 8% to 6% from April. So that will impact, you know, the take-home pay for a lot of people, which is one of the sort of, it was sort of mooted at the beginning of the Chancellor's speech. So he said right at the beginning that there was tax cuts coming, but he saved it till right at the end before he gave us the detail of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose thinking about what the Chancellor said, he said he's in a position to do some of this because inflation is falling. So looking at the OBR forecast, it's currently 4% and they're saying it will be back under the 2% target in the next few months. So, Will, just bringing you in here, we've clearly touched on this before, but just as a bit of a recap, is there any real material relationship between tax changes and long-term growth?
Miles, I will be a buzzkill here. It was very nice to hear Claire's summary of all of that, actually. And, she covered it very, very well. And but on tax rates and growth, the relationship is unclear, to be honest. There's a variety of cross-country studies and they'd preach caution against kind of, you know, leaning too strongly on the idea. There is some intuition at the extremes. We've talked about this before. But yes, I think the point to make is not to get too carried away here.
Fair enough. And Claire, there was some other interesting news, wasn't there, for savers and investors, with the Chancellor also confirming that the government is still planning on selling its stake in NatWest, but then also a new type of ISA, what's being branded the UK ISA, was announced as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Now, this was quite interesting. And I think, you know, we know that the government really wants to try and encourage more people to start investing here in the UK. And it's something that the regulator, the FCA, is also looking into. And we as a bank, you know, work very closely on that. And you know, my role is part of my role is trying to help people understand the reasons to invest and how to start doing it. So what we saw today was the confirmation or the reaffirmation of the government's intention to sell off its stake in NatWest. If you remember, it sort of had to bail the bank out back in the financial crisis. So what the Chancellor said today is that the government's still hoping to do that. They're looking to do that in the summer. And what this is part of a sort of a number of initiatives that they're hoping to encourage a new generation of investors is what he described that as. So we're still awaiting the detail on that. We'll keep close to it and bring more information as we get it. But that was one thing that they mentioned in the budget to try and help encourage people to invest. Now, the other thing, which as you mentioned, is the announcement of a new type of ISA. So this is called a UK ISA. Now, it's going to be in addition to the existing allowance. So what at the moment, you'll may or may not know, but every year we have an ISA allowance every tax year. It's currently £20,000. So you can invest up to £20,000 within an ISA, and then any returns you make on money within your ISA is free from tax. So that's capital gains tax and dividends tax in the case of investments, and then income tax for cash savings. But in addition to that £20,000 allowance, people are going to have an additional £5,000 allowance that can be invested in a UK ISA. But there are going to be restrictions around this because it's for investment. So it's going to be invested in the markets, in the stock markets, and it will have to be in UK investments. Now, at the moment, that's all we know. As you mentioned earlier, we're recording this soon after the statement's finished. So there's a consultation that's been announced by the government, which will take place over the next few months. It's due to end at the beginning of June. So during that time, they'll be consulting with different providers from industry, including ourselves, and we will get more detail of exactly when this will be launched and how it's going to act, how it'll work and be implemented in the months to come. But interesting, and as I say, it's aligned to this sort of aim and objective to really try and help encourage people to start investing, to put money away for the longer term, because as we cover off a lot here on Word on the Street, you know, investing does offer the potential for sort of greater gains over the longer term than if you just keep everything in cash savings.
Absolutely. And I suppose that also serves as a timely reminder that the tax year end is drawing ever nearer. So if you haven't used that £20,000 allowance as it currently stands, then do have a look at doing so if you can. But Will, I can sense you just kind of rubbing your hands in the background at Claire's comments there about long term investing. We alluded to the forecast there. So a bit more growth, a bit less inflation in kind of short summary. What does that mean from an investment perspective?
Well, yes, Yes, Miles. So, I mean, first on the economy, I mean, I think, as you know, we've been a bit more positive on the outlook for the UK economy than most recently.
Yeah.
Certainly the OBR anyway. And some of that is corrected in the OBR's growth and inflation forecasts relative to November. So there's more growth, less inflation, like you rightly say. I think it's worth pointing out, though, that and this is with reference to the investing picture in general, I guess, but there are still risks to in both directions with regards to the OBR's central forecast for the UK. You know, there are, you know, on the upside, there the next few years could easily see productivity surprise positively. I know I've been saying that for a while, but actually the technological frontier is moving briskly at the moment, something that has been happening for a while, but we may be on the cusp of a broader sort of commercialization of these positive technological developments, in my opinion anyway, and also in the opinion of some much better informed people than me. But obviously things can go wrong too, but be wary of leaning too heavily on the last 10-15 years in the UK for guidance on, you know, what the road ahead looks like. I think that's, you know, an important point to make. The longer something goes on, the more comfortable, you know, confidently we extrapolate it deep into the future. That's the only way we tend to see the future, isn't it? But that recent past in the UK and for the world, but for the UK a lot more than some, it's littered with shocks, some of which just won't be repeated in the decade ahead. So sure, some other shocks will come along, most unpredictably, of course, otherwise it wouldn't be a shock, but be careful, I think, as an investor, how you handicap the potential for such unpredictable events. That, you know, the price of being out of investments during one of these periods of industrial transformation, it can become quite hefty, even if you are, you know, even if you feel locking in interest rates is attractive. In a sense, you are in that giving up that call option on that sort of productivity growth, in which the UK could well play part, I think. So I would be a bit more positive on the outlook more generally, I think. And for investments, you know, the other point to make is that the UK economy, even if it does do exceptionally well, will not materially alter the sort of world's capital markets trajectory. The UK economy is too small now. And also it plays a minority role even in the capital markets domiciled here. So, you know, the FTSE and other indices dance to the tune mostly played by the US economy and the US capital markets, you know. So just keep that in mind. And always think about sort of, you know, having exposure to the global economy in a way as much as possible. And you can do that, obviously, in one of the multi-asset class funds and portfolios that we and many competitors offer to get you that global exposure.
Absolutely. And we're recording this a day earlier than usual. Is there anything at all that's caught your eye more globally from a markets perspective over the past few days, or not really too much to note for now?
Not masses. The outlook for the global economy is roughly the same. So, you know, you from last week, I would say. But yeah, I mean, there has been a bit more data. So those ISM surveys are quite important, the services one. So, I mean, both seem to be, you know, pointing in a better direction. And the detail is still sort of like a little bit more encouraging than the levels, I would say. And in capital markets terms, you know, the same questions are sort of really being arising. You know, quite a lot of it is about, well, if we are in a repeat, rough repeat of the second half of the 1990s, you know, how far along are we? Is this bubble territory? You know, is productivity going to lift off, as people say, or are we going to have another flatline? You know, those are the kind of questions, along with the geopolitical stuff that we, you know, regularly discuss. Those are the questions on people's minds at the moment. But like I say, I think the major thing to focus on at the moment is that not just AI, but the, you know, the moving technological frontier. And I think we're maybe a little bit closer to starting to commercialize that. And that's when it starts to affect living standards more broadly and, you know, help the world along a little bit, as well as the world's investments.
Got it. Brilliant. Well, look, thank you both for joining at short notice there. Very much appreciated. And hopefully that was a useful initial summary. We will speak again next week.
This podcast is not a personal investment recommendation. All tax rules can change in future and their effects depend on your individual circumstances, which can also change. We don't offer personal tax advice. You should obtain this independently if you are unsure. Investments can fall as well as rise in value, and their past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.